99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, birds. Happy Masters Thursday. I got Georgia on my mind, and I got three other dudes here in the studio with me. Actually, four. We'll get to Julian Voss later in the show. But for now, it's Braden Fogerson, Ben Hootie, and Joey LeMaster getting some reps in for Joey and Julian today as they will be taking over for Braden and I in a season from now.
It's the first time we've announced it.
Is that, making it canon. Yeah, that me and Braden are done after this year. We are graduating, and Joey and Julian are going to take over alongside Ben Hootie. So we'll get to hear from them a little bit today. Joey, pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, and I was excited to be here for the Mikey bomb for the drop itself, but it's going to be a fun day. Can't wait.
Well, we will talk first, before we get into your big interview you brought on, Masters Day. Big day. I said it last week. We have a lot of shows. Ben has his finger up. He's already ready. Ben is super into golf. This year more than ever, right?
Yeah.
Like you kind of gotten into it. And I remember you talked about it a little bit last year.
It's feeding my soul right now.
Yeah, golf is huge. It's a... for everyone who wants something to watch on a Thursday, because it feels like Thursday is always when like big sports things start, right? Like we did a show on the NFL draft, we did a show for March Madness, we do shows all the time for big Thursday things. Day one of the Masters, Ben Hootie.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. First off, like our next 5 weeks is Thursday was the first Thursday was March Madness. Week later, MLB opening day break, Masters break, NFL draft. It's just going perfectly with lining up perfectly with our show. They know that Red Zone's on Thursday at 6 o'clock. But yeah, Masters has been awesome. Been watching it all day. Some good stuff, some bad stuff. Tiger looks good so far, not too bad. I know everyone's rooting for him. I've got a couple other golfers that I'm rooting for, and yeah, it's been a good day. It feels like spring is here now, officially. Mm-hmm. That's the best part about it.
And it's going to be beautiful this weekend. All right, everybody give me your person that's going to be wearing the green jacket on Sunday. I'm going Bryson DeChambeau.
What? Well, I mean, I'm picking Brooksy, but he's even right now through 9. So
I do like Brooks.
Not complaining. Could be worse. So I'm just picking Brooks. I'm riding with my guy.
Joey?
Yeah, so I'm going to be like a basic kid at the park that has some chalk, and I'm going chalk here. I'm going Scheffler.
Fair enough. Braden Fogerson.
For me, as I remind myself of who's in the Masters leaderboard left to choose from.
Or who's going to win. You said who's going to win the big races.
I think he's sitting at 31st right now. I think Tiger's got him right where he wants him.
Fair enough. Can't count out Tiger Woods.
Yeah, don't let him strike.
We talked about it, Joey and I, when I was doing my newscast half an hour ago with Jameson off air. Crazy. This would be 24 consecutive cuts made for Tiger Woods. Hey, and if you haven't watched Full Swing on Netflix, the cut is actually after Friday, only the best players get to play on Saturday and Sunday. Okay. So he's made that 24 times in a row. Every time he's played in the Masters, he's done it. He had to withdraw the last time he played in was that Century or something like that, I think? It was, or the Arnold Palmer. He had to withdraw on day two because he was sick. So hopefully he was one under last I saw, so hopefully he keeps it up.
Are we going to be wearing red on Sunday?
We better. Yeah. We have to. Sunday Red. This is literally the name of his new company, right? Yeah. Sunday Red.
It's weird seeing it without the Nike, though.
I know.
I was going to say, seeing the Tiger logo, it was a little...
What do you think of that Tiger logo?
I think it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
It's not as iconic as him and Nike, but...
Is he not with the Nike anymore?
No. Him and Nike had like a mutual breakup. It was weird. Mm. Like Nike posted about it and says like, thanks for the fun or thanks for a great ride or something like that. Like it was a mutual breakup. But this is the new logo. I'm showing it to... You guys,
I have a weird feeling it's going to, like, he's not calling off Nike. Like, I feel like this might turn into, like, a Jordan brand thing where it's in, like, connection to Nike. It hasn't been announced yet, but I feel like at some point or another that could be the case, right?
That's not bad. I don't mind that.
It's nice. I mean, if you haven't seen it, I feel bad talking about it. If you haven't seen it, look it up on Twitter. It's a tiger.
Like a tiger. Yeah.
It's a tiger, and it's shaped kind of like golf holes. I think that's what the kind of goal of it is. I don't know. It's his first time doing something like this wearing all that, I think, so, or at least the Masters, so. Yeah. All right. Well, we have 55 minutes. We could talk the Masters, but I think, Joey, you want to introduce us to what you've brought on the show today?
Absolutely. So I had a big opportunity to interview Kendall Lewis, who was on the team for 3 years. He transferred from Appalachian State. He had his goodbye. Didn't go out the exact dream he wanted to, but going out first round in the MVC. But it was nice to talk to him with him being the captain of the team and a leadership. So we did a little wrap-up of his collegiate career, and I had a good time.
First off, Ken, Mr. Lewis or Kendall, whatever you like, just thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Yeah, so... First question, so like throughout your time at Illinois State, what's like your favorite memory, like exclusively from a game?
So many of them.
I want to say, and probably the most recent I can think of is the Indiana State. I mean, yeah, Indiana State, just because the gravity of the game and the energy it took, and how sorry, my voice, and how random it, and just how random of a time it was for us to beat that team, mm-hmm. and it was like nobody expected it, and it was just like one of those stories you can take home with your kids, mm-hmm. yeah. be your ranked team. It was definitely a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys exclusively sent them to the NIT, so thank you for your service.
Oh, yeah. But good luck to them.
Yeah, good luck to them. They're in the finals. I forgot who against. But after spending 3 years at the school, you're kind of considered a leader amongst your peers. So how did you embrace the leadership role? Were you more strict, or did you just like to have fun with your guys?
I try to be a little bit of both. But I try to always remember the goal, remember the plan, game plan. And just not let us stray too far from it, and just keep everybody on track. But I always remember it's still just a sport, and we can still have fun in it. And having fun is the most important part.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of fun, there's obviously fun moments you get to share with your teammates. Like, is there a funny locker room moment or your moment you share with your teammates?
Let me see. Before. I forgot which game this was, but it was like towards the end of the season. Coach Peden, like to hype us up and to get us in, like, I guess the mindset that we're dogs. He put like dog bones in each of our lockers, and like the whole locker room was filled with dog treats and just dog toys. And it was funny. It was just like, hey, it got us in the mindset though. I think that might've been around the time we played Indiana State. Okay. So it definitely helped.
Oh, no, that's real. That's a Coach Peden story if I've ever heard one. That's funny. What would you say, like, when it came to game time, what was your role? Like, how would you describe your style of play at Illinois State?
Just tenacious. I like to use the word tenacious. Just tenacious rebounder and just energy guy, high motor, making sure the team is energized, because energy starting the game is important. And, yeah. The leader, the captain, being a captain, being the voice, and just making sure everybody's ready to go, ready out there. And when I'm on the court, I do a lot of talking. So I like to say I'm the voice of the defense. So it's just a big leader role for me.
Of course. So you're talking to your teammates, or are you like talking smack to the other team as well?
Oh yeah. I got to make sure the other team know what's up too.
Nah, that's real. And so, this could be an assumption, but I've seen your Instagram bio, and I see it every time we text. It says maybe 2K. So I'm curious, what's a nickname behind, like, what's the story behind 2K or 2K Lou?
2K Lou, actually, I think this is sixth grade. My sixth grade teacher gave me the nickname K Lou, and it's like just Kendall Lewis short, and she just started calling me that, and K Lou stuck forever. And I'm not gonna lie, I have no clue where the 2K came from, but I think when I first made an Instagram, I needed a name, and I just went with put 2 in front of K, and then my number, I stuck with 2s, like, in my numbers, like 20, 22, 2, mm. So 2, the number 2 just stuck.
I got you. And then, so, you have your clothing line, 2K Lou, which is in your bio, so is that more for, like, NIL, or is that, like, a passion thing you're chasing, and what's the story there?
Yeah, it started off as NIL, and it started off as, like, I just needed a platform just to, like put my name to, or put, like, a brand to. And I want to expand more on it, because I haven't really, like, it's still just like a brand thing, just selling it for a brand. But I do want to expand on it and make it into better fashion stuff, like better fashion gear. So that's on the way, for sure.
And that's exciting stuff. And then, so your career started off at like Appalachian State, and then you transferred to Illinois State. So I'm really curious, what's the difference between North Carolina and normal Illinois?
It's a big difference, but I guess you could say it's a big difference anywhere, really. But those are two very, very unique places. Boone is like no other. It's at the top of the mountain, and it has mountain ranges. You can go to like lookout points and just look at miles and miles of mountain ranges, and it's beautiful. And the weather is not too much different, because it's both freezing and unbearable sometimes, but I probably I probably can bear Appalachian State weather more than normal weather because it was snowing today, I think, this morning. But normal is definitely more of a chill, just out of the way type of town. Boone was like out of the way and like two out of the way. It might have been two out of the way. You might be lost, but normal you're near something and. Yeah, I like normal. I'm not saying I like normal better. I'm not saying I like normal worse. Mm-hmm. But they both have their uniqueness to them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You put it well. Like, normal is like kind of the best of both worlds. It's like it's not like too bussing, but like it's not too far away where there's nothing going on.
And right.
So speaking of differences, you kind of started here towards the end of the Dan Mueller era, and then here for the start of the Coach Peden era. So like, what's the difference between their two identities and philosophies?
Yeah, they're two completely different coaches. They have their own style. Coach Mueller was probably more like he had, of course, because he's a vet coach, but he had his system more set, and he knew like what he wanted needed us to do in it, and just it was more structured. Just like this is what I do, and this is what I need to do this, and that's a good thing because if you're a vet coach, you have your way and you have how you always do it. So you don't want to change it. You want your players to adjust to it. But that year it was a lot going on. I don't ever blame him for getting fired. I don't ever blame him for our season, but it was a rough season and it was time for a new change, time for a change up. And we met that well. Well, I feel like I met that well because a lot of change happened in like, short time, like 2 months between the coaching change. And when Coach P came, he came on business. He actually talked to us after the game that we lost, the last game of the season. And like, nobody was trying to really hear him talk because he was just introducing himself and nobody was like listening to him. Cause like, why are we even talking to him? Like, our coach got fired. Our season just ended. We're not really trying to talk to anybody. But yeah, once he got on campus, you could feel his urgency and how much it meant to him to get started, because we got started immediately. People started entering the portal and he started getting people up here, people in here working out, and it was good. I always felt how urgent he was and how much he wanted to create something for this program.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something you see in his heart. So I'm a big fan of Coach Peden. But now that your collegiate career is coming more towards an end, what would you say your impact is at ISU? Like, how do you think you'll be remembered here?
Yeah, I just want to be the guy with all the energy, the guy people love watching the C play, just knowing that I'm the hardest player out there every time I'm playing. And I'm the best leader people seen. Like I like, of course, being out in the communities. Like the camps we were doing with the kids in the community. That's the part I really want to be remembered for, is just how I impacted the community and how the kids remember me, and if they remember me at all. And it's just, I feel like I left a good mark because we did a lot of good stuff with Coach P and with Coach Mueller. They gave us a lot of opportunities in the community and I took advantage of them. I love the kids in Norman.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. So to elaborate more on that, then the camps you did, like I'm guessing over the summer, like when did those camps take place, and like what opportunities, like what did you guys do there, and do you have like a favorite memory with like a certain kid that sticks out to you?
Yeah, we had it was just coaches camps for the kids, and we did one every year, and they really loved, like when Coach P came, like you could see the difference. The first year Coach P came, we had a good crowd. Then the second year, it was even crazier. And the third year, it just kept getting higher and higher. And that just shows how well we were doing and how much they enjoyed it. But a kid that I probably will always remember, oh, that's easy. It's Brady. His name is Brady. Like, I've seen him for 3 years. I don't think he's grown one inch, but that's my guy. I got pictures of him all over. I wish I had one with me, but that's my guy for sure.
No, that's beautiful. Love hearing that. And so with it coming towards an end of your ISU career, is there anything you wish had gone differently? Are you happy with how everything went down?
Yeah, it's a lot of things, of course, I wish could have went differently. And there's a lot of things I can say that I wish would have happened. So, no, I don't wish anything would have changed, because I wouldn't have been able to have the opportunities I had now. And I might have been able to go do other things, but you can always wish for better. So I'm happy with how things turned out and how we handled things, because everything happens for a reason. So
yes, sir.
I'm very happy.
As you should be. But now we're happy here, but we got to know what's next in the career of Kendall Lewis.
Yes, sir. I'm currently searching for an agent right now and just trying to continue the professional career. Basketball is far from over for me, I can tell you that.
Yes, sir. I love to hear that. And just thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Good luck with
whatever's coming. I appreciate you, boss.
Thank you. And just good luck with whatever's coming to you next in life. I believe in you, sir.
Of course. Of course. Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, stay smooth.
WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Fernelli putting on his headphones way too late. Braden Fogerson, Ben Hoodie, and Joey LeMaster in the studio. Antonio Reeves was not enough to save John Calipari's final years at the University of Kentucky. And we start there as we get into some college basketball. Thank you to Kendall Lewis for doing that interview with Joey. But let's start with some John Calipari going all the way to Wupig in Arkansas after leaving Kentucky.
Have you seen the TikTok account that I think it started with him like screaming about Calipari, but he's just like every single losing team of a tournament, men's or women's, he would just be like insulting the coach and like, this person can't coach. And like, he just yells at everyone. I think now that basketball season's over, I don't know if he's going to switch to a different sport. But
I thought you meant James Draws for a second. Like,
no, that was last year. Yeah. Is he still doing anything?
Yeah, I saw a TikTok of him.
You just got a fade the other day.
I saw that.
Like a haircut.
Oh, I saw that. He got a fade and then he had his merch on. What happened? Joey?
But no, isn't it crazy what like Jack Golkin and Doug Eadert can like do to a man? Because like he was like a Kentucky legend, and then all of a sudden he's got to like pack his bags and go to Arkansas. Because like I saw that like once he got the Arkansas offer, like he like told them in Kentucky, like, you got a match. And they just went, nah. And so like now he's all the way in Arkansas. It's just crazy coaching change.
And he said he met with a team yesterday, and his exact quote was, I met with the team. There is no team. They have one player still on roster following their coach leaving and a big transfer show. And we start there. That's the problem with college sports these days, as we've talked about on the show a number of times. He is going to have to completely recraft his roster. Braden, you said it last week when we were doing the show so poignantly. You never know. You can never like be like, oh, but they're supposed to be good next year, because the roster is going to be completely different year to year. This is like taking that to a T.
But see, the thing is, when you're in the SEC, I'm not worried about you. For a team that's like in the MVC, they are going to struggle because everything's going to be different. When you are Kentucky, when you're Louisville, when you are even Arkansas, you're going to get people that are good. And when you change, and if you can find the right people, they can buy into, oh, I want to play for a guy that's already in the Hall of Fame. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to find people for him. So I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, and like the big thing too is like he's already bringing his Kentucky guys. Like all the recruiting class that was going to Kentucky, they've already decommitted, which means they're going to go to Arkansas. And I know Aaron Bradshaw, he's decommitting from Kentucky, and he's going to follow up just do it in Arkansas. And plus, I didn't know this till earlier, he's like best friends with the guy that sells like the Tyson chicken nuggets and all that. So that's like
I heard about this.
That's his main deal for like scholarships. Like he's going to have all of his player back and even more money to work with. Like he's guaranteed like $5-10 million just in NIL, which is nuts.
That's the other crazy part of it. That becomes part of free agent sweeping for coaches.
Did you guys see the report today that Kansas spent like, it's either $4 million or $4 billion this past season.
$4 billion?
$4 billion is not fathomable.
Okay, $4 million. it was definitely $4 million. There, like, they spent $4 million on NIL, and I guarantee you half of that went to, why am I blanking on his name right now?
Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah, Hunter
Dickinson.
I feel
like it would be somewhere in between. Like, I don't think it'd be $4 billion, but I feel like $4 million is kind of low for
either
Kansas,
way, it's crazy.
They spent a lot. I remember talking to someone in the class we have last week talking about NIL, Illinois State raises around like $700,000 a year, something like that.
This is Illinois State. Like, that's a small Missouri Valley Conference. Not small, but like not a school that's particularly well known for their NIL. I mean, think about an athlete like Livy Dunn or like LeBron James Jr., like getting all their crazy NIL deals they do, Arch Manning, stuff like that.
Wait, I mean, without the Pac-12, are we in the Power Five now? Are we the Power Five? Are we the fifth Power Five school?
By no means. Until we join the MAC, then like we got to build the football stadium.
Okay, MACtion is kind of
all right.
Fun
as
now.
Ben wisens up after laughing at me mentioning Livy Dunn, we move on to this rest of this March Madness tournament. So UConn won it all. I mean, we predicted it last week, right? We said it was going to happen. We said it, but UConn and Purdue, and we said UConn would roll them in the national championship. Was it just that easy? I mean, he said he's going to be a kid at the playground and do some chalk. Was it just that easy?
Yeah, I hated picking chalk, so I couldn't pick UConn there, but it literally was that easy. Like, it's just nuts because, like, UConn lost their, like, three best players from last season and just somehow got, like, two times better, which is nuts. But, like, when you have a center like Donovan Clingan, you have one of the best draft prospects in Stephon Castle, literally anything can happen. And it's just the issue with Purdue is, like, yeah, they had Zach Edey, but, like, with all due respect, I know I'm supposed to, like, be nice, but, like, the Purdue guards suck. I'm just going to keep it real. So, like, Zach Edey can only do so much at 7'6", so I think that's what ended up hurting Purdue.
It's tough. We look at the women's tournament as well, where that ended up being one. I want to say that was weird that it was at 2 o'clock on Sunday or 1 o'clock.
I don't think it's as
was.
Bad as what the men's tournament yeah. did.
This is true.
How
was
you
like,
mentioned
really
it last
cable?
Week?
Yeah.
Weeks ago, how it was on what TBS?
Yeah.
And what are we doing with these national championship start times at like 8:30, 8:40? Yes, it's horrible. People don't want to stay up that late to watch these. Pick you got, and either way, there's nothing else going on. When the national championship's going on, and as well as what am I missing? As the men's national championship,
NASCAR. You're missing NASCAR.
Okay. Put it on a Sunday or Saturday.
Well,
like,
the Sunday at 3 o'clock is about the best ratings. Isn't that when the Masters are going to end around that time
yeah.
as well?
This
like
is golf,
they though. Always put sports. You decide when a sporting game starts by TV, nothing else. It doesn't matter the convenience of the fans or anything. The number one reason that they decide this is because of TV. And so that's why you get so many more games going on Sunday at 3, even despite all of the ramifications of that. And, you know, when the women's tournament have already done it, they're just going to keep doing it.
I liked the 2:30, 3 o'clock start time for the women's, honestly. The thing that felt off about it was that like the way that they like ESPN like broadcasted it, it didn't feel like it had the implications of like a huge, massive game that it, you know, it's the most watched women's title game of all time in South Carolina and Iowa.
Yeah.
It just felt like a normal ESPN broadcast.
What, so, well, I guess that is the description. Like, I was going to ask because I was doing the baseball game here,
right.
So
they
I
changed
didn't know
up like
how it went.
Like for like the finals and all this, they change up the graphics and make it cool. Not really for men's national championship, but still, it just didn't have like the feeling of a national championship game, and it just felt like any other Sunday college basketball game. I don't know if you guys watched and felt the same way, but that was my only kind of like gripe with it.
Hopefully, if the women, sorry, just
no,
real quick. Hopefully, if the women's side gets more, keeps the focus that people had on it this year, heading into next year, they will take it more seriously of trying to figure this out. I bet they were just behind on schedule and like, well, now what do we do? And they just didn't get anything in time.
Iowa's last three matchups against LSU, 12.3 million viewers against UConn, 14.4 million viewers against South Carolina, 18.9 million viewers. Game one of the World Series between the Rangers and Diamondbacks, less than 10 million viewers. So women's basketball definitely took a jump up this season as it pertained to viewers on television.
Yeah, and just when it comes to back what Ben was saying, it's like they don't really know how to promote it just yet because like the star power came out of nowhere. Like I remember for the Iowa UConn game, they had like the players do like their own introductions, like hype them up, and like Paige was coming out and their team was like, and it's the ultimate Rizzler, Paige Buckers. It's like, what are we doing? Like this
I
is
did
so
say that. That was bad.
That is
that
weird.
Was bad.
That is weird.
And I love Paige, so that hurt me.
Something I did find kind of interesting when it comes to like the women's versus men's and like how much of a step forward women's basketball took this year, and it's honestly true, is I think it was Paige might have said it, that most people that she talked to can name more women's college basketball players this year than men's.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's real.
Fair enough. Because that's how you grow the game, personalities, right? Like that's one of the best tweets I saw of the whole March Madness. It's like this is all it took to grow the game for women's basketball. Make personalities popular, make coaches be controversial, and all of a sudden you have like the 80s NBA.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what happens because 3 years ago, ESPN still had the women's basketball, both WNBA and women's college basketball, and they would make Instagram posts and the comment section would be full of like misogynistic, like not a real sport stuff. When you get stuff like that going on, we get crazy, insane athletes and great personalities. No one's going to be saying that nearly as much anymore, and that's how you get people to really take it seriously.
And you really got to take it seriously. Like, I'm looking at, like, for the Indiana Fever, because there's, like, 110%, that's where Caitlin Clark's going to be drafted. Mm-hmm. 80% of their games are already nationally televised. Mm-hmm. No other team has 80% of their games nationally televised. So, like, the sport's getting so much respect, and it's completely deserved.
They, like, already locked in, like, double ticket sales just by locking in that first overall pick mm-hmm. when they figured that out, that was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's crazy stuff.
Here's another debate. And I 100% agree with, like, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark going to the WNBA that, you know, viewership's going to skyrocket. But do we think it's going to skyrocket by that much?
No. I think Caitlin would have been better.
I think the biggest debate about it is the fact that Iowa and LSU and UConn and South Carolina already have these, like, ingrained fan bases with college students backing them up, with boosters backing them up, with alumni, that it almost was so huge for the sport that it boosted it more for college basketball. I think Clark and Reese and Paige isn't going. Is Paige going
no,
to draft?
Paige has another, she's
going
another she's year. Too young.
But still, I don't think it will boost up WNBA viewership. I just don't think it'll be the huge jump that women's college basketball took this year.
Well, the NBA has lost, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah,
like
point.
It was, like, basically peaking of popularity when you had the Warriors and Cavs, and people got tired of it, but it was amazing stories. And then the regular everyday people got priced out, and all of the tickets got too expensive. You get rid of the aura of the playoffs of everyone wearing all the same shirt and just that crazy atmosphere in favor of letting a bunch of rich people that don't want to do that just kind of sit there, and, like, they don't care about sports like the everyday person does, but they're the only people that can afford it because the NBA got so big that they priced everyone else out.
And that's really the big thing on why I think college is always going to remain bigger than the WNBA. It's just like, you just have college kids there, just had their tickets right there to have a good time. That atmosphere is just not going to be matched in any sport. And that's why the WNBA, it's going to take, like, a lot of time. And that's why I don't think it's going to take a massive skyrocket.
I think Caitlin Clark has a chance to make it about, you know, that skyrocketing material. It's because Braden just said it, the story side of it, right? You have the story, and that's where the NBA kind of fell out of line in recent years, because they're, you don't feel the stories as much anymore as some of these newer players. That's, I mean, we're journalism majors, communication majors. We understand that. But I just want to add one more time, just to before we get to Joey's point about what Ben said. Is Clark leaving too much money on the table in going to the WNBA? I undoubtedly think she should be going pro. To any chance, like every athlete says, anytime you get a chance to go pro, do it before you break your leg and you never get the chance. But she's turning down $3.1 million plus next year. That's how much she made this year. Mm. With how much her stock skyrocketed this season, I think she can make even more. Second mention this episode, the only people making more, Shedeur Sanders, Bronny James, and Ben, do you want to say it?
Livy Dunn.
Joey.
Yeah, so the big thing comes with storylines, and I think this is going to be another point why viewership isn't going to skyrocket. There's, like, a generational prospect, which is always huge. But, like, I look at, like, Victor Wembanyama. Who here has watched more than one Spurs game?
I only watched a preseason game when I was in San Antonio.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. So this is literally the best prospect we've seen in, like, decades in basketball, and still no one watches. So, like, I think, like, the first couple of games, people are going to start tuning in, but they're going to fade out quickly.
I think another thing, what you were saying, Mikey, made me think of something, but what was it that you said again? I don't know. I already
about
lost
the,
what I was
leaving
saying.
NIL money on the table.
So to me, if she stays another year, she's leaving NIL money. But for one, she's got enough Nike money that it'll probably still be fine. And two, she's already broken the record. Anything more she stays, it's just an asterisk. She even broke her own record. But guess what? She stayed way more than anyone else could have possibly afford in any other time in national women's basketball history. So I think it only would serve to prove an asterisk. And now she needs her next challenge.
All right, L.A. and Chicago, both missed out on the first overall pick by, I believe, one pick. I think it's they're 2 and 3. So the WNBA and the NBA properties are pissed right now that they didn't get that option, right? I mean, the Indiana Fever, I'm sure it'll be great. I'm sure it'll be fun. Aren't the Indiana Fever usually pretty good? I remember seeing that. But to put her in a bigger market, Chicago or L.A. would be exactly what they want.
So, yeah, do what the NHL did. Just, like, give Chicago the number one pick when they weren't
supposed
to be.
The number three pick.
Yeah, but they did last year, and they gave him Connor
Bedard. No, I'm talking about the Chicago Sky of the number three pick.
Yeah.
The Hawks had the third best odds to get Bedard, and they got bumped up because of a lottery.
Yeah,
maybe they could have done. You're on the right track. Maybe they could have introduced the lottery this year for Clark, like they did for Bedard.
If you put her in Chicago, she's still competing with every single team in Chicago. They got two baseball teams. They got a football team. They've got a huge basketball team and an NBA team. If you put her in Indiana, she's pretty much it. You got the Pacers, which have been good, and they've already proven that they got some fan support when they got a lot better this year. And that's pretty much it. So I think there's something to be said about being in a little bit of a smaller market.
Yeah, but like I think my big thing is like I look at the Chicago Bulls, for example. They stink this season. They're like the definition of mid, but they're still like top three in attendance. So it's just like imagine – and they that have no big name. Yeah. So if you put a big name in Caitlin Clark like Chicago, tourists are always going to come in. Respectfully, no one's going to Indiana. What's in Indiana? So like no one's going to like fly out there to see Caitlin Clark. You put her in a big city like Chicago, tickets are going to always sell.
Basketball capital of the world.
When she comes to play in Chicago or when she comes to play in L.A. or basically anywhere else. All right, we got to go to break. When we come back, Julian Voss joins the show. One of you through WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation. Braden, Ben, Mikey, now joined by Julian Voss, next year's Red Zone producer. You might have heard him on the call with me Tuesday night at the University of Illinois in Champaign. We had a fun time with that, Julian.
Yeah, it was a very good game. Obviously, we didn't get the win, but it was still cool going out to Champaign for a bit, seeing a lot of the fans out at U of I. They're all pretty cool sitting out there. A lot of new promos. We saw, like, the popcorn promo. A lot of the fans were loving it out there, but yeah, it was a good time out in Champaign.
It was on the video board before the game. It was
the popcorn promo.
It was if and when the Fighting Illini hit their first home run of the game, free popcorn at the concession stand. So it was it looked like a mass panic after a home run. The aisles like I actually thought something was going on at first. Like I thought there was like an issue because the aisles just got flooded and everyone went to the concession stand. And then the funniest part was they hit a home run early on in an inning, and then we came back or everyone started to gradually come back, and ISU came all the way up to bat. People were still kind of gradually feeding back in. Greg Nichols of ISU hit a home run on his own on the ISU bottom half of the inning, or excuse me, top half of the next inning. And some U of I fan comes up to me and Julian right at the booth, like at the bleacher level of the booth. They're just like, did they hit a home run? And I was on air, so I would just go like, yep, thumbs up. Like, yeah, man, like you're getting your popcorn. Like, you know, ISU did it too. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and we had a good time doing it, Julian.
Yeah, the game was pretty fun to watch. Obviously, it took a while for Illinois to score a lot. It took about, the fifth inning, I think, we got our first run in. Yeah, it's really bad offensively, but the pitching was pretty good, but the third inning really just killed them.
Third inning. That home run was part of it, I believe.
But they bounced back yesterday and beat Western Illinois.
They did.
I think they got something cooking over there at Duffy Bass Field. Really good.
They had a good game against U of I, too, except for that third inning. The relief pitching looked great. Rabarzik looked really good. But we're here to talk about the Illinois State softball team, where as much as I see the relief pitching looks good for the men, the women's team, the softball team, is really starting to meet some bad luck with their pitchers. But the guys, Joey and Julian, talked to Hannah Meshnick about how the season is going. She's been a stub pitcher for them, and here's the interview.
So far, how do you feel about your performance this season, just yourself and then the team?
Yeah, so I think we started a little slow. I think our record, we might not have the best record, but if you like really kind of watch us, we're like in a lot of games. A lot of our games have been one run, so I think we're just doing a great job competing, but I think we just need to do a better job at kind of just finishing the games. But again, we're right there, still kind of working on putting it all together because we are a young team, so we're still just kind of working through stuff, but I'm really proud of how we've all improved so far.
And we've seen you've had to pitch a heavy amount so far this season with a lot of innings pitched so far. So is that taking a physical toll on you right now? And how is it like keeping your arm healthy throughout the season?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a lot more innings compared to last year, for sure, since we lost our two senior pitchers. So I have had a bigger load, but we have great, like, athletic trainers that help kind of keep us all conditioned. So that helps a lot. And even in the fall, like, everyone kind of makes sure that we're prepared for this moment, so.
That's good to hear. So to follow that up, new head coach Tina Kramos this offseason, is there any specific adjustments you've had to make with her become the new head coach, or is everything still kind of running the same?
No, I would say everything's kind of running the same. Last year was her first year, so things are pretty similar. I've only had Tina as my head coach, so I've never really got to work with Melinda, but other players have said that things are pretty similar to how they were.
Okay.
And you're currently 7-7 in conference, and the playoffs are coming up pretty soon. So how do you really feel about your team's playoffs hope right now?
Yeah, like I said before, like we're improving every weekend. So, you know, we've seen a lot of teams. So I think going into the conference tournament, seeing these teams that we kind of have a good game plan going in. So I have a pretty good feeling that we're improving, and I'm excited to see how the tournament will go.
And do you feel like being at ISU this season and with it possibly having the playoffs being there this season, do you feel like you have an advantage being at home during the playoffs?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of the seniors, they've never got to experience a home, like, conference tournament, and this will be the only time that I'll get to experience. So, yeah, it's just a really great thing, you know, that we can have the whole community come out and support us, and also just getting to sleep in our own beds, too, helps a lot. So, yeah, I'm really excited to have the MVC tournament here.
Which is absolutely huge. But you hinted at it earlier in the call that the team had a slow start to the season, but now the team's starting to get red hot. So I'm curious, like, what's the vibes in the locker room? Like, what was it at when things were going slow, and how is it like now?
Yeah, I think the main thing is kind of just being tough through those hard moments, because overall, like, that's what's going to help us. Like, losing the close games, you know, we're learning every game, so we learn from all our losses, and that also just contributes to our wins.
And then to follow that up, so you talked about how you felt about the team's performance, but like, how do you feel like your season's gone so far personally?
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously learned a lot from my freshman year, but getting like over 100 innings, I'm learning a lot more. So for me, the big thing is kind of just being focused and being locked into every game. I think I'm doing a better job, and like I said before, I'm still learning, so I'm proud of myself, but I think I can definitely improve still.
And what do you think is your best trait that you've been carrying on with yourself throughout the whole season?
Yeah, I think kind of just being positive. Like, through all the losses, it can be easy to get down. But again, you just have to, like, keep the energy up, and especially as a pitcher, you just have to show that you're not tired and stuff like that, and kind of just bring everyone up.
And then my final question, you kind of hinted at it a little bit there, but with the team starting to see more success, how does the team maintain that and stay hot heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, so I think it also goes into our preparation. We're prepared for playoffs. We're prepared for these moments. So, again, just kind of staying focused on our end goal, and I think we'll be okay.
Perfect.
And to conclude with all of this, do you think there's anything else you'd like to say about the team this year, about yourself this year? Anything, any examples or anything like that?
Let me think. I would just say the main thing is I just have a lot of fun playing with them, and they're just a really fun group of girls to play with. Like, we're always just having fun in the locker room, in the dugout, in between innings. It's just a really fun group.
All right, I'm going to thank you very much, Hannah, for listening to us today. We've been obviously been looking forward to this for a while now. We hope that you have a great season so far. We hope that your playoffs are very well. Hope you guys play very well. And I hope you can listen to us at Red Zone this year.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julian and Joey, for doing that with Hannah, that interview. And we have a couple minutes here before we get on to the final segment of the show, so we will discuss the Redbird softball team. And yeah, I mean, it's good to hear that Hannah said that she's feeling okay, because she's been a star pitcher for them this season, in a year in which they started off relatively hot in conference, but they've caught up to them as they've lost a fair amount of their pitching.
Yeah, it's just tough to keep up with the depth. And it's not about management. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do.
Right.
Sometimes it's just the arms run out. You know, you've got players that are injured, that are redshirted because they're injured. It's not like you're sitting there being like, well, we should have trained them better. Injuries happen in these sports. And so it's just, what arms do you have left? How can you manage it? And it's going to be tough the rest of the year, but, you know, eventually you get used to it. You know, the last week, for example, they were supposed to have a game on Tuesday. UIC canceled because of rain and weather, and both of those teams really benefited from that, being able to have that extra time off. And or it wasn't UIC. It was the weekend week on the Tuesday in which they played UIC over the weekend in Chicago. But anyway, you know, when you have that extra time off, it keeps your arms fresh, because you only have so many. And, you know, baseball, you're limited at pretty much 100 and your arm's out. You can go a little bit further in softball, but over the course of a three-day weekend, you know, you can't push it too much. So
they were doing pretty well for a minute. They beat Missouri State 2-1 in their series. They swept Bradley in two games of a doubleheader. They got a game off Drake, and then, yeah, that game at DePaul got canceled, and they lost 2 to UIC, and now they look at Valparaiso this weekend at home, where Ben Hootie and Liam Lyons will have the call tomorrow night starting at 4:50. I'll be in the studio for that one. And they're giving a fun giveaway. They're giving out full replica jerseys for the game. But if you can't make it out there, then you should listen to Ben and Liam on the call. What can we expect, Ben?
A good game, hopefully. A game that Illinois State wins. They're facing Valpo, who's has a 2-9 conference record. So talk about all these pitching problems and whatnot and kind of falling off the wagon after a good start in conference. So I think this is similar to kind of what Illinois State baseball did when they played Valpo, kind of get yourself back on track and kind of hopefully ride a 3-game win streak.
Yeah, that was incredible what Illinois State baseball did to Valpo a weekend ago. They won 3 quick games. They played on Sunday despite the rain, and their pitchers were locked in. All 3 starters had incredible outings, only allowed 1 earned run through 3 starts.
Yeah, and I would like to say the biggest thing to me about playoffs for either softball or baseball, I think pitching matters the most in baseball. A team can have the most amount of hits, they can have the most amount of pretty much runs, anything like that, but if you don't have enough pitching to really get you through the season and kind of just like corral your team, because I feel like the biggest leaders on your team are your pitchers and your catchers. Those are the people you're looking forward to, the people that when times go tough, you're going to the mound visit. You're trying to see what they're trying to say so you can just try to corral yourself around them. And I think this team can still make a good run in the playoffs, but they do need to do a better job at getting their pitching rotation going. And Hannah said it herself, that's when they're going to be most successful.
And it's always big to be able to have the run support. You know, like you said, you need to be able to score and to have Abby Knight win her first career Player of the Week award this past week. I mean, she really led the team in this past week herself. And, you know, for players like Meshnick, I mean, she's just a sophomore. She's got plenty of time left to really learn how to grow into the player that she's going to become over these next couple of years. And to have that amount of work, you know, it's one thing to practice. It's one thing to throw a bullpen. It's a completely different thing to play against MVC competition throughout the course of a year. And so to be able to have all these young players play and to pitch someone like Meshnick is going to really lead to success here soon for the Redbirds.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the NBA and some locked-in teams on the playoffs, including your Chicago Bulls. We'll be right back. WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. We got 15 minutes. We're going to bring back some NBA talk. Glad to see it as the playoffs begin. I believe it would be next week. I saw the Bulls have 2 games left, so yeah, it's going to be next week. The Bulls locked into the 9 seed. They will play the Hawks to start the play-in tournament for the second straight year. Ben shakes his head, so I go there.
It's a mess. I mean, you think the Chicago White Sox are bad. This team is just mediocre. Jerry Reinsdorf teams just love to be mediocre, and I feel like we've done Jerry Reinsdorf rants multiple times, and I'm not even a Sox fan. It's tough. I don't know what the plan is going forward. If, you know, you invested all this money into this team that just continues to be injured year after year, it's always wait on Lonzo Ball, everything will be fine. No, it's over with. They're a mediocre team, and I would be perfectly okay if they just decide to blow it up this offseason.
And what's so frustrating about them adding onto what was already way too big of a postseason with way too many teams and teams with losing records always getting in, you are just perpetuating mediocrity. You're not only perpetuating the Bulls being a 9 or 10 seed and being happy with that because they get a couple playoff games before their season's over, but you also get teams that are so bad that they can't even get into that big of a playoff field sitting there and like, yeah, you've been the worst team in the league and no one showed up to your games because you were terrible. And guess what? You have the draft lottery and you might still not get the first overall pick. It's just, it's so frustrating because some of these teams have been sitting here like, I don't claim to be a Trailblazers fan anymore because I don't watch the NBA. But if I did have a favorite team, it would still be the Trailblazers. And they've been horrible forever because this whole system just continuously rewards teams for being just fine with being the 10 seed.
And I do want to ask you guys, did you guys see the play with the alley-oop play with Torrey Craig and Andre Drummond? That pretty much right there shows me exactly what Chicago Bulls of basketball is. They have no type of organized. They're not organized at all. They pretty much just go out there, do whatever they want, and they think that's what we want to see as Bulls fans because they sell out the game so much more and more that the Reinsdorfs just don't care about their own teams being this mediocre like this. And we see that with AK, their GM, Mark Eversley. Both of them have been doing pretty much nothing except for trading for Nikola Vucevic, which I personally think was the worst trade in NBA history, or one of them. And we pretty much just see from there that this team just doesn't care about anything. And I'm a Cubs fan myself, but I feel bad for White Sox fans because this is one of the best cities in the world for sports, and we get nothing out of it, and it's just all mediocrity that nobody really cares about at this point.
What was that Nets trade? That's the one that I think is the worst one, where they traded for, like, yeah, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, KG. And they gave up, like, their next 10 years. Yeah. It was like, that was just so bad. That was, like, draft day level.
And then they tried to fix it by, like, going out and doing it all over again with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. And it only worked for, like,
half a
15
season.
Games? 15 games they
got
played
on ESPN
together?
A lot.
Yeah. And now they're, like, back to mediocrity, and their best player is Ben Simmons.
Yeah. So bad. So bad.
Are the Celtics kind of the winner go home team of this playoffs? Like, is it like winner bust kind of thing? Because I know the West is beating each other up, and like we talk about this Lakers squad that's 10 games above 500, and they're in the same position in their conference as the Bulls, who are 5 games below it. But you look at a really easy Eastern Conference, and you see the Celtics at the top, who have won, let's see, 13 more games than the Bucks in the 2 seed. I mean, that's incredible. 62-17. I mean, that large of a gap is not even something we saw when the Warriors were that good. That's incredible. Is it like, if you don't go win it all this year, is it a complete disappointment?
100%. It's been too many years in a row where everyone kind of gave them the grace when they lost to Steph Curry, and Curry won his fifth? It's crazy. Everyone kind of gave them grace. They were still young on the scene. Last year had an all-time choke to the 8 seed Miami Heat. And this is going to be their third year in a row as a number one seed, a championship favorite. And if they don't really get it done this year, it's kind of just, they kind of claim this title as just perennial chokers. Like,
no, they'll hit their Virginia arc.
It's about time. Well, they didn't lose in the first round last year. They lost as a 2 seed in the conference finals to the Heat.
Yeah, but they still lost to like a horrendous seed.
But either way, this has got to be the year. You literally built this squad up. They had to trade some people away, but they brought in Porzingis and Drew Holiday to add on top of Jalen can't use his left hand and Jason Tatum to try and finally build this super team that just is so much far leagues better than the rest of the league. They have to get it done.
Well, Jason Tatum's only 19, too. So it's
he's still 19?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's only 19.
Yeah, my thing for the Celtics this season, Jason Tatum is somebody who I feel like out of all top 10 players, he's talked about, I think, honestly, the least. Nobody really talks about Jason Tatum as much when it comes to MVP talks because it's been Shea, Jokic, and Luka that whole time. But nobody talks about Jason Tatum in the one seed in the Eastern Conference. He played against the Golden State a few years ago in the finals. Didn't perform at all. He had Jaylen Brown carrying him the whole time. And everybody has since then says he's not a playoff performer. This, I think, is his year to prove to everybody that he can actually be in the spotlight and that everybody can see him being an NBA champion. Because if he doesn't win it this year, I feel like that's when his legacy kind of gets diminished just a little bit, even though he's still young.
What do you think, speaking of the Warriors, JB, about this locked-in Western Conference play-in matchup? We get to see a rematch of that finals that was so many years in a row, as Braden alluded to, but now it's the Lakers and Warriors. There was the talk of the NBA trade circus in the middle of the season that LeBron could be a Warrior. There was all this nonsense, and at the end of the day, it's Steph, and it's LeBron, and it's the retirement home, but it's a chance to continue on in the playoffs. And what do you think? I mean, this is two teams that are both 10 games above 500, but they have played to a lower level than expected, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think this is honestly the end of Golden State's legacy and Steph Curry, pretty much. I think this whole season, he's just been really fed up with everything that Golden State's been happening. We've seen Draymond Green get suspended earlier this season. We've seen Klay Thompson not being like himself. Andrew Wiggins can't do anything really this season, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the end of Golden State's run, and Steph Curry also himself knows that. And I feel like as he's aging more and more, he's kind of more so going for the accolades, and He's got all the rings he really needs. Like, I think he personally is probably the best point guard of all time. I put him over Magic, but I think LeBron and the Lakers will take over this game. And I'm not saying they're going to win the play-in in general, but I think they're going to beat Golden State.
I know we hated on the Warriors for the longest time, but like the fact that we got to live in the era of Steph Curry was probably one of the coolest things ever. It feels eerily similar to like the Caitlin Clark thing right now. That's with this transformation in women's basketball. For Steph Curry, it was like he redefined shooting three-pointers, and like growing up in that was just really cool. And like even though I hated him like growing up because it stunk, like seeing Steph Curry and the Warriors always be in the finals and always win, I got a lot of respect for him because he literally changed the game of basketball, and he just seems like a good dude too. So,
I mean, I'm trying to find the exact stat right now, but there was that crazy report in the end of 2023 about the world's 50 most valuable sports teams, and Golden State Warriors, who were completely irrelevant in Oakland, California 10 years ago. Yeah, number three. They are. I'm scrolling through the article right now. It went Cowboys, Yankees, Golden State Warriors. Current value $7 billion. They owe about $6.5 billion of that to number 30. That is crazy. Yeah. How do you completely reflip it? They're bigger than the Cubs. They're bigger than the Dodgers. They're bigger than the Knicks and the Lakers and a ton of other big football teams, the Bears, the Packers.
The Indiana Fever.
They are big. They're the Illinois State Redbirds. They're bigger than everything. They're bigger than Scottie Scheffler. They're bigger than everything. How do you do that? How do you get one player to completely change your culture like that? And is he going to retire a Warrior? Ben's saying he's fed up. Is he going to go try and play elsewhere and take his severance package from the $7 billion Golden State Warriors?
The way the NBA is now, I think as much as we'd love to see him retire a Warrior, I think maybe it could be in the cards for him. Maybe not next year, but whenever his contract's up.
He is a UFA in 26, so he is in the third to last year of his contract. Yeah. So he is technically under contract through 26.
I mean, he could keep playing. I know injuries is kind of derailed the last couple of years, even though they won that random championship when it felt like it was over.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You know how the NBA is. Like, once, I don't think it's no love lost if he goes to another team, but it'd be cool to see him try and stick it out and win one more in Golden State. I just don't think it's possible.
Yeah, I know he's from Charlotte, so I don't really think he's going to go home. That's not going to happen. I think if he did leave, he'd probably go somewhere like New York or a big market like that. But I think he's the type of player, I think, nowadays, he's kind of the old school with, like, trying to stay with his legacy and keeping the same team. So I think Steph Curry's going to stay. It's going to take a lot of money out of Golden State, I think, too. But I think he kind of reminds me of Dirk and how he kind of stayed with the Mavs all those years. And I think he kind of just wants to keep his influence from Golden State because, to me, he's top three influential players of all time, next to Allen Iverson and next to Michael Jordan. Those two and Steph Curry, to me, are the top three most influential players, not just because of basketball, but what they did to it. Because nowadays we see people screaming Curry instead of Kobe. And like that, to me, just pretty much just shouts how much he's really done for the game.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, this Warriors team, they Ben pointed it out. They did win a random championship. Not even random. They completely retooled over the COVID year and the 2021 year, and then they came back with the same core and won another championship. What's to say they can't figure it out again and finally get rid of Draymond Green and keep just Steph Curry around as a player coach, basically, who still won't miss any threes? I don't think they're completely done. They could just really phone it in next year and see if they can't figure out something with Steph Curry at
37. That's what they've been trying to do the last couple of years.
Are you guys fine if we transition to a different story that's me? So you guys mentioned how Steph Curry was changing the game and made everyone focus on threes. The pitching game for baseball switched to velocity, and every single pitcher from MLB to the ones just learning the game are being told you need to be able to throw 95 plus to have a shot at making the league. And now it's finally come to roost with the pitch clock, which worked to fix the game last year, and now they shorten it, and it's just continuously bringing more and more injuries. You really have a problem that, you know, not only is it obviously a problem now that needs fixed at the MLB level, but you are going to continuously be teaching pitchers the only way they can get to the league is velocity. They're not, I mean, these guys are competitors. Even, you know, when you're young and just learning the game, you want to be able to be great and to be able to be good. And I'm sorry, no one's going to be like, I'm not going to throw because I'm afraid of getting hurt. They're going to say, I'm going to be the one that's not going to get hurt. And then they get hurt.
It goes back to, and the velocity thing is huge, but it even goes back to that rant that Tyler Glasnow had a couple years ago, right after he tore his UCL. And
well, how did that rant go? I don't.
It was going with the what's it called?
The
sticky stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Glasnow basically complained, saying that, look, like, yes, that's a part of the game, but I use sunscreen because it's so hard to grip the baseball when you're trying to throw it 100 miles per hour. And ever since then, you've just seen these crazy pitching injuries. And we're, what, a month into the MLB season? Not even. And we've seen some of the top aces in the league go down. Gerrit Cole is hurt right now, and he won't be back until mid-July. Spencer Strider's out the year. Shane Bieber, God bless his soul, is going to have a season-ending Tommy John surgery for the second time and a season-ending injury for the third time. Framber's hurt. Josiah Gray. It's just all these big names. And it's just horrible to see. And there's really no fix to it because of what you just said. You are taught at a young age, throw as hard as you possibly can. Kids are blowing out their arms in high school now because of just how influential that is trying to throw 100 miles per hour. And then what happens after that when you come back from your injury? You end up throwing harder, and it usually helps you in, you know, potential college stock, draft stock, or whatever. And where do those injuries end up coming back because of how hard you were throwing once again?
Yeah, credit to John Boy Media, because this is where I was learning a lot about it. But Trevor Plouffe was talking about they do need to bring the sticky stuff back.
Yes,
just like you said.
Not
that
spider
there
attack.
Are leagues in there were leagues in Korea, I think they were talking about, where they pre-tack the ball and they allow that, and that has led to kind of fixing the problem a little bit. Anything to be able to get, if you were going to have these pitchers throwing as hard as they do, give them something they can grip. And I know it sounds counterintuitive to like let these people cheat, but I'm sorry, all these rules that the MLB has kept coming up with and juicing balls, they've been helping offensive players for years. They can help some pitchers be able to throw better and to be able to keep from getting hurt, because you are losing a ton of stars right now. The biggest star in your league is not able to throw this entire year because of this problem.
It's like a scale, basically, because the one year that they allowed the spider attack heavy, it was a pitcher year where home run numbers were an all-time low. We need to fix that. We need more home runs. Let's juice the baseballs. And it's just back and forth. And now I guarantee you we see a change just based off the amount of pitching injuries there's been in a month of the season.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of The Red Zone. Special shout out to Joey LeMaster and Julian Voss for joining today's show. You'll hear a lot more of them after you finally get rid of me and Braden. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day, and it's good!
Curry owned the league last year, and personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
JD, I've got five.